This is The 10th Voice, Kansas City's gay and lesbian radio magazine. The 10th Voice, because you refuse to be silent.
It's the second Saturday. This is the San Moran Radio Book Club. I think I have Ann Terpstra from Chicago. Ann, are you there?
All right.
We're getting Naren on the line. I'm going to start the discussion. We're talking about Femme Confidential, Naren's book from 2017. I heard her in New Orleans at Saints and Sinners this year. The subject was non-traditional lesbian romance, and I thought, you know, who'd be a perfect panelist is Ann Terpstra, because you are always championing different genres and looking, including different genders. And have you always, Ann, been this way, or is this a recent interest? You are very much all about inclusivity.
I think that's always been true for me. I think, you know, as my knowledge grows, I become more inclusive. Obviously, at 16, growing up in a small town, what I knew to be inclusive was narrower, just because I didn't have the personal information, or just I grew up in the 80s and 90s. Some of the options available, some of the language wasn't there. But no, I can say I've always been inclusive. It's just been fun to get more inclusive as I get older and get more awareness.
Well, I appreciate it. And I think we have Naren on the line now. Is that right?
Yes, you do.
I want to ask you, Naren, what made you want to explore the subject of queer relationships and gender?
Oh, you mean because the character is femme? Like, what do you mean by gender?
You included a trans woman who, and that's not real common in lesbian romances.
I don't think I really wrote a lesbian romance, but are you asking sort of why did I include a trans woman? Well, I wanted to write a book that was about the experience of being femme and about, you know, lesbian femmes coming out and living their lives and having their relationships and stuff like that. Because I'm not sure that that's been done too much. And I guess my definition of femme doesn't exclude trans women. I'm not sure that every trans woman, you know, not, obviously there's not a monolithic story about trans women. So it's not that every, you know, trans woman necessarily would identify with being a lesbian femme. But I think that is a story for some people. And I think the reason that I chose it was because at the time when I started writing this, which was back in 2011, there's just a lot of excitement and interest in my lesbian community at the time was in Montreal around trans men and people doing benefits for trans men to get top surgery and stuff like that. And I'm like, well, why aren't we really talking about trans women? But that's changed very radically. So
thank you very much. And I want to congratulate you. You're the first Canadian author we featured on the show. We've had more than 40 shows. So I appreciate your coming on.
Oh, thank you.
And I want to ask you, I'm not sure I've read many books where the point of view is partly in first person, one character, and otherwise is not. What about you?
I noticed that right away as well. And then I was curious actually to hear Naren's thoughts on that, because it's obviously intentional. And I liked that it was both first person and third. The structure that I thought was interesting is that typically when you have a multi-POV book, and it doesn't have to be this way, it's just typical, each person gets kind of an equal share of the book. And this is very obviously, for me anyway, Liberty's story. And then Dana and Veronica are secondary, but they do get POVs even though they are secondary. I like that. The thing I like particularly about first person with Liberty is, and I'm not a huge first person fan, but first person can often get very introverted and it becomes about introspection and can veer on, to me, narcissism sometimes. It's hard to carry a whole book with one internal first-person POV. That voice has to be very distinct. And what I liked about Liberty is Naren used her first-person voice to look inward, but also to look outward a lot. And she observed the society around her, the queer society around her, the gentrification. And I think that gave me a breath from it being too internal all the time, which is what can affect me about first-person. And Liberty was very aware of the changes around her. As her understanding grew of the society around her, so did her observations of that, and I thought that was a good use of first person.
Naren, your thoughts on that?
Thank you. Well, I think my book has a lot of humor, and I enjoy, one of the things about having first person and third person is, you know, sometimes you have the other characters sort of doing their own critique and having their own thoughts of each other, and I think that can be used for a humorous effect. I think there's also a lot of fish out of water humor in this, so people not necessarily having a full understanding of what is going on around them and operating more instinctually, but I think what happened with my structure was that I suddenly realized that I wanted to tell the story from multiple points of view. And I was actually watching Orange is the New Black's first season. And I thought, what if I structure my novel kind of like this? like where you have sort of a main character. A lot of it's her story, but it's also very much kind of a community story. So there's a cast, shall we say. And I think also I did that with sort of the for each of the characters in the same way that they do on the TV show, where you kind of go and have a backstory. Each of the three characters, you get a bit of their backstory, a sense of what they were like before they all kind of met in the city, and what little piece of what they were as a child or an adolescent. So that was actually the structure that I borrowed or was I thought might actually work. And, yeah.
I also wanted to ask about BDSM, because some of the book threw me outside my comfort zone, and that's not a bad thing. I really enjoy that. Nairn, your book is so eclectic. It includes so many different types of relationships. Can you address that?
Well, I mean, I think in some ways I was also influenced by sort of 70s feminist, second wave feminist novels or stories where you have a story about women, and it does tend to focus a bit more. I mean, it's various information about, for all these characters, about what work they do. That's always important to me to include and stuff like that. But I mean, these are kind of their more interior stories, you know, their relationship stories, friends, lovers, and big romances and so on. And so, I mean, I guess I wanted to write about sexuality in a way that was honest and that would tell you about sex and tell you about relationships and, you know, in its awkwardness and its joy and its variedness and stuff. And I also sort of wanted to sort of show a little bit about how, in some ways, in the 90s, there was a lot of movement in my sort of generation of queer women of sort of trying to be like gay men or trying to live that way. And so I did write about what I thought were kind of queer women's attempts at creating a bathhouse, for instance, lesbian bathhouse, or a queer kinky weekend, and to what extent they work or don't work. And there's, of course, some humor in that.
And Anne, your thoughts?
I really appreciated that about this journey of this book. I think when people think romance, and I don't think this book really qualifies as romance to me, you're thinking of one relationship and the journey of that relationship and what happens within it. And in this case, mm-hmm. I think Nairn's book for me fits more of the traditional publishing label of women's fiction, which isn't a great label, but I'll use it in this case to say yeah. It's more about a journey through time and not just a single relationship as the focus. And I think it succeeded in that way because you definitely get that sense of liberty, in particular ages. You know, her initial fumbling attempts at sex are awkward and they don't always work out. And I think that's an accurate representation that you don't see a lot in books. It gets a little glossed over. And then as she gets mm-hmm. older, she gets more in sort of control of what she wants. She starts to understand some of her past mistakes. You really get to see growth of a sexual journey. And I think that's really true for a lot of people. I mean, I think there's this idea that you have great sex in your teens and 20s because you're young. And then it all just falls apart. And there's a lot of awkwardness when you're young that hopefully for some people disappears as they get older and the sex and the journey gets stronger and everything sort of improves because you're growing as you go and learning from things. So I like that you saw that in Liberty and, you know, stuff that even as she got older, there were little jokes about like, oh, you know, yeah, I'm not doing that anymore because I'm 40 and not 20. And as a woman in my 40s, I appreciated that part of it.
Yeah, well, I think it's also a book about love, too. I mean, I think for some, I mean, for the characters, in some cases, it's quite intertwined, their sexuality and their, you know, emotional capacity. So I think it's also about sort of learning about how to do relationships better as well.
And I think relationships are messy and complicated, and awkward is my middle name. And
but it's everybody's, really.
It really is. And I enjoyed, toward the end of the book, one partner is ill. And they're dealing with illness and how does a relationship possibly evolve toward polyamory. And I just thought you included so many things. I read too many books that I think of as a little bit fluffy. You know, there's kind of a formula and they argue and then they get back together and then there's a conflict and then they get back together. And yours was way more complex than that. And I want to congratulate you.
Thank you. But I think in a funny way, I guess I am a romantic because, I mean, the characters do find a loving relationship. I think this is true in real life. They just don't exactly look like a nuclear family. I mean, I realize that is a reality for some lesbians is that, you know, they are in monogamous, have kids together relationships, but that's not true for lots of people in the queer community or, well, in, I guess, in any period.
Anne?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm in what could be considered fairly heteronormative relationship in terms of monogamy, and we have a child together. But I agree that that's not the case for everyone, and that sometimes, you know, what you want can change. You know, I think Liberty wanted something, or thought she wanted something in her teens, 20s, and then it's not that she wanted to be a different person when she was older, but sort of the things she embraced changed with age. So I think it can be age dependent as well as just saying this is the way a lesbian live and being a general. I don't think that's effective. And it's also good to say, and we change as we get older, and what we want changes. And I think her relationship with, you know, Beth is so different from her relationship with, say, Lisa, even though she's getting older in both of those. And I think it's nice to juxtapose those two things. I wanted to ask Maren, actually, if this was intentional, but Lisa and Beth, her two of her, you know, primary partners, their names derive from the both from Elizabeth, but they're very different butches. And I wanted to know if that was intentional. Like, did you pick a name and then separate them and give them kind of two things, or was that just random?
No, not remotely. No.
Okay.
I think I usually like to choose names that fit a particular era. And, you know, I did tend to choose names that I thought, okay, those are the names that people were called for that during that era. Those were the popular girls' names to some extent, or even the case of Liberty, whose parents are hippies, was also very much of that particular time.
Naren, I wanted to ask you, many books are chronological. It begins, there's a middle, and an end, and yours skips around. So the reader has to look carefully at the dates and think, okay, it's first person, this is Liberty. What was your intention in doing that?
Well, I think, as I said, I sort of, you know, my inspiration for the structure came from a TV series, or the way a lot of TV series are structured, which is to say that you have what's going on, let's say in 1990, and it moves to 2014. The only places where it really sort of shifts is when you get the backstory of the three main characters. Otherwise, it does move chronologically.
And I think it was brilliantly structured. I'm just curious, I assume you're writing another novel. Or intend to?
I'm actually thinking I might not ever write another novel. I definitely need a big break, but I think if I do one more project, I actually thought I might go back to my zine days and do something more collaborative. And I'm kind of interested in maybe doing a graphic novel. But I think that's all. I'm not sure I'm going to write another book. I think I've said what I have to say.
And Anne, you're an author too.
Mm-hmm.
So would you tell a little bit about your thought process? Because I actually have read as a beta reader what you wrote, and I think you're a very fine writer. And so one reason I wanted you for this particular book is you are a writer.
Yeah. So I have written a manuscript that I'm currently shopping. Mine's much more linear than Naren's is in terms of it's just two POV and follows kind of a standard structure. But I'm really into realism and dealing with characters less at a sort of fantasy idol level and more like a day-to-day how are we getting through things kind of level, which is, I think, where Naren put her book at, which is one of the reasons I enjoyed it. Sort of took that gloss off that you sometimes get when you're looking at relationships and things. I think playing with structure is really interesting. You know, for another work in progress I'm working on, I'm kind of debating POV right now. It was interesting to read Naren's as I'm trying to decide how many POV first, second, third person, taking sort of the uncommon way of doing it is a good starting point. But I like to sort of challenge myself and say, well, does it need to be told that way? Or can I do this a different way? And like Naren said, referring to Orange is the New Black, you can certainly get inspired by things other than books to look at your own work and maybe make some different choices that make the work stronger in the end.
I like what Naren said, too, about a graphic novel. I love reading different types of works, and I prize originality, and I have not read a book like Femme Confidential before. There was an Amazon reviewer. I didn't see a name, so I can't credit the person. But this reviewer said, this novel is not quite a Bildungsroman and not quite an epic about urban queerness in the past four decades, but it is a coherent. Events which seem momentarily surprising are shown to have been predictable. In time, Dana fathers a child, and Liberty discovers a real talent for sexually dominating women who want her to. Gender roles in BDSM are never faddish or arbitrary in this novel. They arise from the characters who embody them. Naren, this ability to have gender roles and plot points arise from the characters who embody them. That's quite a compliment, and I think you do accomplish it. How did you do that?
I don't really know how to answer that question.
I'm very talented.
Yeah. Thank you. I have a lot of good friends, and I think, you know, I think writers are observers, right? And so you see how things play out and stuff like that. And I think there's, like, I've said about this before, but I think there's a bit of an archival element of my book too, is that I wanted to capture a particular era and how people thought at that particular moment in time, and, you know, particularly history that we don't see a lot of. It's a book that's, parts of it are drawn from my life, parts of it are drawn from friends' lives, parts of it are just entirely made up, or might start with a little bit of things that are true and then make up from there. You know, you don't want to let truth stand in the way of a good story. So I guess threaded it together somehow.
And it's a fairly complicated novel. A lot of events happen, people change, they reconnect, and everything seemed real, as you had said.
Yes.
They arise from the characters who embody them. And I think that's one of the things I most admired about this novel. It's one of those novels that you have to pay attention. And to me, that's a good thing. What about you?
No, that is a good thing. And you're right. The naturalism really works. Again, that's something I'm drawn to. So it works for me because I really like those things. I like to see things come out of characters rather than be imposed by the plot. Not that I don't enjoy a good sort of plot-driven mystery or something like that, but I'm really a character novel person, and I feel like that did that. And one of the ways it did that too, and I really like this about the book, is Naren works in little bits here or there that come up when you're working through life, but it's not that everything's a message. So like when Liberty encounters someone who is Black and then realizes that she has a weed, and because she's this sort of sheltered hippie white girl, has no idea that that was even a thing. You know, as someone who grew up from a small town, you know, you start to encounter these cultural things as you move into bigger cities and go, I had no idea. And then it moves on. Like, it's not this big thing that gets explored. You just acknowledge that truth of, like, when you come from a small isolated area and go somewhere bigger, you're going to run into stuff you had no idea about. And even Liberty sort of wrestling with, what is Butch? And I thought Butch was this, but it's this. That's obviously a big theme of the book, and sort of her observations of that.
Naren, I also wanted to ask you, how did you decide in a relatively short novel to have so many characters? Because you control them beautifully. Are you a plotter? Do you have a storyboard? Or do you just kind of let the novel evolve?
I do work with outlines. So yeah, I mean, I do know exactly kind of, I know where I'm going. Then as you write, sometimes your outline gets changed. You're like, okay, that wouldn't work, or a better idea comes along. So I don't think it's all just, you know, floating around entirely in my brain and just kind of, you know, easily thrown onto the page. I think, I don't know, I do read a lot of mysteries, and I certainly notice plotting and admire it. That's true. I do think it's things that, especially in Canadian literature, I think we sort of underestimate plotting. In some ways, I think because Canadian literature is very focused on sort of literary fiction and having a very poetic sound and stuff like that, or, you know, how creating beautiful imagery. And I think that that's something I admire hugely about genre fiction, and I think that literary writers could pay a lot more attention to, which is plot. And respect it. Yeah.
I appreciate it. I want to ask you, Naren, how someone could find out more information about you.
Oh, that's pretty easy because I have an unusual name. You can Google me, and then you'll probably go to my website, which is www.femconfidential.com. I'm eminently Googleable, and people can even, it's not even too hard to find me, and really a Goodreads. I'm on Goodreads.
And I should probably mention for those who are spelling challenged that your first name is spelled N-A-I-R-N-E and your second name is H-O-L-T-Z. And what are you currently involved in? I know you've had a move, and you are settling into your new home, and you do ceramics, throw pots.
I do, yeah. I've been working on some stuff. People can find me at my website. It's aeterpstra.com. My name is, I guess, barely Googleable just because it's not super common. But no, I've been working on some pottery. My website sort of covers both my writing and my pottery. You can go basically two different directions from the main site, so if people are interested, they can check things out both ways. And I'm hoping to kind of firm up some plans for my first novel in terms of the MF and where it's going to get published sooner rather than later.
And I met you at the Golden Crown Literary Society annual convention in Chicago, where you live. Mm-hmm. And Naren, I met you this year at Saints and Sinners Literary Festival in New Orleans. Naren, do you have future plans for literary festivals?
Well, I have a few more events that I think I have three more events to do before I kind of stop doing events for hopefully a long time. But they're Canadian. Saints and Sinners is I think the only sort of U.S. LGBTQ festival. I'm aware of the Golden Crown, and I've been to it once, and I think its focus is more lesbian romance, although I think that's actually I think it's sort of expanded from there a bit. There's a fun event I'll be doing in Kitchener-Waterloo in Ontario, Canada, called Cliterature, which is going to have its 15th anniversary. And I was actually right at the very first one. And it's kind of a celebration of mostly queer women and sexuality through different kinds of medium, dance, writing, music, film.
Sounds very interesting and eclectic.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
That is one of the things I really enjoy about Saints and Sinners in New Orleans is it is LGBTQ. And so I had Jeff Mann on the show recently, and he was on a panel with Dorothy Allison. And it was just so fun to hear the two of them interact. And I really enjoyed you on the panel, Nairn.
Thank you. I think there should be room for both. So I think there should be room for people who are, whether they're sort of, you know, lesbians or whether they're, you know, trans men or gay men. I think there should be room for us as a community to sort of come together sometimes, but also to sort of go off and do our own thing sometimes. So I think there should always be room for lots of different approaches.
I certainly agree with that. What about you, Anne?
Oh, absolutely. I think there's value in both. I think we gain a lot of strength from being a larger community, you know, including everyone. But I definitely think there are spaces and times for sort of getting together in a more specialist fashion, if you will, and kind of finding that more niche support group that really kind of gets exactly what you're talking about a lot of the time. Both of those supports are really helpful.
I want to thank you both for being on the show today. I appreciate your giving up some time on a Saturday to talk about Femme Confidential, Nairn, and thank you, Anne, for being a sensational panelist again. We're going to talk to Allison Solomon about her novel, Timing is Everything. This is a Santa Moran Radio Book Club. We will have been on the air next month, 3 years. We've done 43 shows. We're part of the 10th Voice, Kansas City's LGBT Community Affairs show. And today we've got two books, which makes a pretty tightly scheduled show. But I am so pleased to welcome first my panelist in the studio, who's been on the show before, Michelle Pond.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Thanks for having me again.
And the author whose book we're discussing. The book is Timing is Everything. And Allison Solomon, welcome.
Thank you. Hi, Elizabeth. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And I do have to say at the very beginning of the discussion, full disclosure, since we're community radio, that I did copy edit your book. I enjoyed it tremendously, found it a different kind of suspenseful romance, and thought we have to talk about it. Allison, what drew you to write suspense?
I guess that started really only a few years ago. I've been writing for years, but never tried my hand at suspense. I read The Girl on the Train, and I thought, I loved it, and I thought, I could do this. And I just started writing and realized this was a genre that really works for me. So that's how I came to it. And also because I do love reading suspense. I don't like books with a lot of violence. I don't like things that are bloody and all of that stuff. But I like the psychological suspense type of novel.
And Michelle, you're an eclectic reader. You want to answer?
Well, I'm a lifelong mystery reader, so that's my go-to genre. That's the first thing I'm going to look at reading. And so, like Gordy and Kat in the book, I enjoy puzzles. And so, adding some suspense or the thriller aspect, mystery aspect to a romance definitely enhances it for me.
And in my first novel, I didn't have romance in there. I mean, the characters were lesbians established in a relationship. And it was really only as I got to know more about the lesbian community and I discovered that there was this large population of readers who also did want a little bit of romance. And not that I think we have to write exactly what readers want, but I thought, yeah, I could certainly put some romance in there.
Allison, it is a tricky thing to disclose the crime in the prologue. Pretty early on, Gordy is seen driving down that alleyway and Wynn has been knocked into a wood pile and is in the hospital. And I thought to myself, how the heck is she getting out of this one? And we're not going to do any spoilers, but what made you decide to give so much information in the prologue?
I think it's okay to give information in the prologue if it gets you thinking what you did. Well, then what's going to happen here? It seems like it's a done deal. I was recently at a writer's conference and for mystery writers, and the writers were saying, you have to think of situations where you have no idea how they're going to get out of it. If you come up with a plot and you know how they're going to get out of it, then it's not a good enough plot. And I love that idea that you start out with something thinking, I have no idea how my characters are going to get out of this. I think the writer wants to be in the same place that the reader is at the beginning.
What I liked about the way Ellison did the prologue, and Ellison, you can follow up on this, is that I think you were able to give a little bit more in-depth of what Wynn was going through when she got hit and when she was laying there in the street than you might have been able to do if you had just included it in the body of the book.
Yes, and to be honest, I thought that Wynn was going to be the main character in this novel, and I'm sure you've had other writers who'll tell you this. Mm-hmm. Other characters sort of take over, and you end up going in a slightly different direction than you might have expected. So I think I really expected to be in Wynn's head throughout, and so of course I wanted to talk about who she was and what she was going through. And Wynn is a character from my first novel, Along Came the Rain, and so I had, like I say, sort of assumed I would stay with her, but then I didn't.
Allison, I wanted to ask, what made you decide to focus on immigration reform? Because that is so much in the news right now, immigration and administration policies. And as I read this book, it was so timely. I kept thinking so many people are going through this right now.
Right. And I guess immigration has always been close to my heart because I am an immigrant. I came to the States with two citizenships. I'm British and I'm Israeli. But I know what it was like to be in this country where other people look at you and sort of just assume that you're legal and you have all the same rights that they do. But actually you don't. And you live with this incredibly heavy burden. Especially when I first came here, I was a student. And so sort of like Gordy's story. You know, I had my student visa, but then I got laid off from a job that I had a work permit, and there was this absolute fear of what happens now. But I think it would be compounded today because, you know, the immigration stuff has taken such a ghastly turn. And when I was looking up some of this stuff to see the current policies, you know, there were immigration attorneys who were saying if somebody got arrested, it's not clear that they would go to trial before they got deported, that the way the law is written, and they could be booted out before they've even had a trial. And so it's a very scary time. And I think, too, I've been, in a way, shocked, I suppose, but certainly surprised at how many readers have said to me, well, I just had no idea that immigrants go through any of this. And when I first wrote the book, I thought about, I don't want to make it about undocumented immigrants because obviously they have an incredibly, incredibly hard time in this country. But actually, so do documented immigrants. It's such a tenuous existence until you are actually a citizen.
You did do a very good job of explaining Gordy's panic, her temptation. I don't think I'm giving anything away, but at one point she just wants to flee. Just get the heck out of Dodge. And I thought it was so realistic that Nat doesn't fully understand because she hasn't gone through it. Probably your experiences, as you said, being British Israeli, it was so real in the book. I want to congratulate you on that.
Thank you. It's such a hard thing. When I was at this point where I wasn't quite sure what I was going to do, I went to an immigration attorney. I'm a clinical social worker by profession, and I did have a part-time job doing some social work, and I went to an immigration attorney, and he said to me, well, you're never going to get your green card through your work because social workers are a dime a dozen, so you really need to get married. You need to find someone who'll marry you. And I thought, okay, this is really sad when an immigration attorney is telling you you should enter into a false marriage. And so I know that sort of desperate feeling.
And I was really, one quote or one thing that Gordy said that really struck me was, citizens never understand the fears of non-citizens. And I think what that encapsulated for me was the way that, Allison, you were able to show, we citizens may know what the general policies are, but we really don't understand the practicalities of the application of those. And in one instance of that, you know, the way that someone can be doing everything right and then something that is not within their control happens that makes them all of a sudden lose their status, such as losing a job.
Right, right. And also, I mean, all the paperwork and documentation, I mean, one of the ways in which things have probably improved is that I went through all of it before everything was online. And so, for example, after I got my green card, once I had it, then we were free to move. And we moved to California, but I didn't physically have the green card in my hand. And then it never arrived in the mail. And when I finally called to say, where is it? They said, oh, we've lost one of your fingerprints. You need to come back to our office. This was in Philadelphia. And I said, well, could I go into an office here in Sacramento? And they said, no, if you do that, we'll have to start your whole file all over again. So I had to fly back so I could walk into the immigration office, roll my finger, and walk out again. And it's those kinds of things that are just sort of endless.
Oh, the bureaucracy is unbelievable. I also thought very realistic was the depiction of the two exes in the story, because so often you think, well, okay, same-sex couple, they get married, they have children, everything's hunky-dory, and you depicted so well the ex-wife is mad. She's mad a lot of the time, and there are issues about custody, issues about where the child's going to be, when the child is picked up, and it's very realistic that that's why Gabrielle was driving down that alley texting.
Right, you know, and of course it's definitely compounded. I mean, she's married, but as we know, you have to stay married in order to get your permanent green card. But yes, and I had thought about how, I don't want to say mean I wanted to make her, but I sort of thought, you know, there are exes that are just, that really do behave badly. But I think that the majority of exes are probably somewhere on that scale of, there are things about their ex that drive them crazy, but maybe they don't want to destroy them. And they just get mad at them from time to time.
Oh, that makes sense. Why did you set the book in Gulfport? I mean, you could have set it in Britain. You could have set it in Israel. You could have set it apparently in Philadelphia or California.
Well, to be honest, I got to the point of feeling I want to write about somewhere that I see a lot, because I think that you can get more realistic details into your writing when, for example, I'm writing the second book in the Gulfport series right now, and this morning I went for a walk to a particular area, and I had my phone with me, and I was just dictating everything that I was seeing, and I was aware of all these tiny details that there's no way I would remember those. Like, I would love to write a book about that would be set in Israel, but I would have to go back there, I feel, and live there. And that's also partly due to my memory. I don't have a good memory. I don't have a good memory for details, so I couldn't make it realistic enough unless it was set pretty much either where I am or somewhere that I can visit. And I know people use the internet to do a lot of research for settings, but there's nothing like actually being there.
I agree. And one of the things I enjoyed, too, about the novel was the different characters' ages, because Wynne is very much older, and it shows her and her activities, and we learn about her once she's in the hospital. I appreciated having an older character, because so many romances, let's be honest, they're in their 20s or they're old. They're in their late 30s, so
right.
Thank you.
And actually, right, so the first novel, Along Came the Rain, I really wanted to focus on sort of women my age who are dealing with that, okay, my memory's really starting to get bad, and is it just I'm ditzy and eccentric, or is it that I'm really got dementia and I've got serious problems with it? Because I think an awful lot of people who are reading lesbian fiction are dealing with those very, very real issues, and like you say, it's a nice form of escapism to read about 20 and 30-year-olds, but it's probably not who the majority of the readers are. And by the way, that's also true in straight fiction. When I was at this mystery writers conference, they were talking about, you know, the average heroine or protagonist or whatever is in her late 30s. Even though readers are older than that. It seems to be a universal thing of what's expected in mystery writing.
Elsa, I thought it was interesting that you had both Gordy and Dana having a child, and then you had Wynne with children also. Gordy was Sammy's biological mother. Wynne adopted both of her girls and at an older age. And also, you gave the two girls really kind of opposite types of personalities. Could you talk about that a little bit?
The two girls' opposite personalities in terms of Wynne's two daughters?
Yes.
Yeah. And that really followed on from Along Came the Rain, because those two girls are very central in Along Came the Rain. So they had the personalities from the previous, from who they already are. And even back then, yes, they were two very different types of girl. Who were going through the foster care system. and how they were dealing with the foster care system. So they just were already who they were. When I started writing, I really didn't realize that people are so much into series. And if I'd had the forethought, Along Came the Rain would have been the first book in the series, and Devoted would have been the second, and Timing Is Everything would have been the third, because they're actually all sort of take place in the same area. In Along Came the Rain, I made it a fictionalized Pinellas County, and I called it Jade County. And in Devoted, they end up here in Gulfport. But really, like I say, the characters, the two girls and Wynn all come from Along Came the Rain. And then Kat was in the second book, Devoted. And obviously you can see that Timing Is Everything is a standalone, because you don't have to have read the first two to read Timing Is Everything. But if you had read if a reader has read them, then they'll be familiar with those characters.
It does have the line, Gulfport Mystery Series Book 1. So when can we expect Book 2?
Right, because like I said, I never called the other ones part of the series, so I didn't think I could go back and suddenly call this Book 3 when the first two had never been called part of the Gulfport Mystery Series. And they're not exactly set in Gulfport, like I say, because it was fictionalized. So it just, I'm not a forward planner in the same way that my books, I'm a, what they call a pantser rather than a plotter. Things come out as I'm writing. I guess that's the same thing. I know there are people who say, well, I have this idea in my head. I'm going to write a 6-book series, and I know what's going to happen in each one. And I'm blown away by that, because I don't even know what's going to happen in the next chapter, let alone the next book.
Yeah, I don't understand those people.
Me either.
That's not how my brain works.
But there are people who do that, and obviously do it very successfully, and probably have a much easier time of it, because they have planned it all out. I was going to say, by the way, the other reason that I set the book in Gulfport is because Gulfport is a wonderfully supportive community to lesbians, and we want people to know about it. We only want lesbians. I mean, we only want the gay community to know about it. We were recently actually profiled in AARP, I think, as one of the top 20 places to retire. And we're like, no, don't tell the whole world. We just want our selective piece of the world to know. But this is an incredible community to live in.
That was clear in the book. When we meet the gay couple, they have just moved in, and clearly the neighbors all know each other, and there's the young man who, I believe he was a veteran, and there's just a mingling that you don't get in a lot of communities.
Right.
And I believe Gulfport has a literary event in February that you might have something to do with.
Right. So our local library, the Gulfport Public Library, has LGBTQ Resource Center, which was set up 4 years ago by a group of local residents who wanted to make it happen. And the library's been incredibly supportive. And it's an online resource, but it's also a physical resource. So we have a whole section of the library devoted to LGBTQ books, movies, music, all of that. And we do a whole series of events throughout the year. We have movie night once a month. We bring in folks to do fundraisers for us, comics like Poppy Champlin. And then last year we started this event called Read Out, and we invited Elizabeth Sims to be our keynote speaker, and we put the word out that we'd like to have authors from around the country submit work to read at this event. What actually happened, it was going to be a general LGBTQ readout, but possibly because I was the person in charge, all the people who applied were people who write books for lesbians. And so we decided that we would just make it an event specifically for lesbians. And hopefully we will also be able to do events for either the general queer community or gay men, trans men and women, etc. So we have our next event coming up in February. We have probably around 17 or 18 authors coming in. Our keynote speaker this year is Leslea Newman, and she's going to be phenomenal because she's an author and a poet and a playwright and writes for kids, and she's a wonderful speaker. And we already have some really good authors who've committed to coming. S.J. Sindhu will be here. She is local to Tampa Bay, and some other wonderful authors are going to be here.
And I want to mention that S.J. Sindhu just recently won two big awards. She won a Golden Crown Literary Festival Award, and she also was the Edmund White Debut Fiction Award winner for the Publishing Triangle. And she's right. Sri Lankan American, and just a very interesting writer. And that's why I want to feature people like you and her who are doing things slightly or greatly outside the box. I prize originality, as I've said, and appreciate so much that I did not predict how your book was going to go. Michelle, did you?
No, I didn't either.
It's a shame I can't tell why, but I can't.
But I thought it came together very, very well. It was a very interesting and fun read.
And I also want to mention that, Allison, you said you found the lesbian community and you jumped in with both feet because you were a board member at the Golden Crown Literary Society. Mm-hmm. And you've been very active in doing this festival and with Golden Crown.
Because I do find for myself the best way to get involved in things is to volunteer. I'm not naturally extroverted, and it's hard for me to just go up and talk to people. But if I have a role, then it's actually easy for me to go up and talk to people.
And I got to hear you read your opening chapter at the National Women's Music Festival. It was nice to see you on that panel. That was the first time you'd been to the festival, hadn't it? Wasn't it?
It was. And I was listening to the music on the show before this one and just really enjoying it so much. Heard you talk about the festival a little bit, too.
I want to know what you've got in mind next. Is it going to be the Mystery Series Book 2, or is it going to be something else? And where can one find out more information about you?
I am working on Book 2. It is going to be suspense. It does take place in Gulfport, and it may be slightly wider than lesbian fiction. I am going to see if I make it mainstream. I, in a way, wish we didn't quite have these separations, because I think Along Came the Rain wasn't necessarily lesbic. It's just general fiction with lesbian characters. In terms of where you can find me, my website is AllisonRSolomon.com. I usually refer to myself as Allison R. Solomon, just so people can find the website easier. And but that's the best way to find me.
Your first name is spelled how?
With one L. Yes.
And Solomon is S-O-L-O-M-O-N.
Yes, I always tell people, just like King Solomon.
But you are slightly different.
I am, although I will just say very quickly that as a psychotherapist, I did have someone who said, well, I picked you because I figured with your last name you'd be very wise.
I like that. And Michelle,
so
I want to thank you, Michelle, for being on the show again.
Oh, you're welcome. It's always a pleasure.
I never have to worry about whether you have read the book and whether you're prepared, because you always are. So thank you both so much, Allison. Enjoy the Florida sunshine.